Welcome to Parkinson's Recovery. This is Robert Rogers. My guest today is Pamela Quinn, and some of you may actually already be familiar with Pamela Quinn, who has been a professional dancer for 20 years. This is a remarkable interview in all respects, and she is a remarkable woman. Pamela is actually not in the United States today. She's not in New York City where she lives. She is in Glasgow, Scotland at the World Parkinson's Conference. Tonight they are actually showing a video that she made which shared first prize in the video competition at the World Parkinson's Conference. You'll be able to see that video if you go to the Parkinson's Recovery blog. I've got that posted today, September the 30th. It's remarkable in every respect. And to find that blog, you can go to the main website, parkinsonsrecovery.com, and you'll see a link there that says blog. Click on that link, and you'll be able to watch that stunning and amazing video that she created for the World Parkinson's Conference. Now, to the first segment of the pre-recorded interview with Pamela Quinn. I'm Robert Rogers, and my guest today is Pamela Quinn, which you are about to discover is a quite fascinating individual. Pamela, thanks so much for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
Tell us about yourself.
Oh, my. Well, I used to be a professional dancer. I worked with a company in San Francisco called ODC San Francisco, and I also collaborated with my husband, who's an actor and writer, Michael O'Connor. And I did that for about 20 years until I was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And I was about age 42 at the time. And it was a hard adjustment for me, as it would be for anyone, but particularly for a dancer, because how I viewed myself and was very connected to how I moved and how other people saw me. It was my source of income, et cetera, et cetera. So I went through various stages of dealing with that reality and have ended up teaching movement for people with Parkinson's as a way to sort of combine my previous training with my current condition. And I have found it very rewarding, and I love doing it. And I teach both group classes, and I have a one-on-one practice.
What were your reactions when you first discovered that you had the symptoms of Parkinson's disease?
Well, I really had a variety of reactions. One of them was relief, because I knew something was wrong and I didn't know what it was, and being able to put a name to it would allow me to look into it, to research it, to learn more about it. One of my reactions was fear. Oh my God, what does this mean about me, about my future? Am I going to end up in a nursing home? You know, what's down the pike for me? One of my reactions was sadness, you know, that my dreams of my future were all of a sudden changed, and there was sort of a period of mourning about my life and what it was going to be. And so there were a real multitude of reactions. One of them was to just dive right into research. What is this that I have? What can I do about it? How am I going to cope? There was a wide range of emotional reactions and then responses to those reactions. Here's one more I just thought of. Another one was, I was diagnosed at a center for movement disorders. And I got home, and this was an immediate reaction, and I said to myself, okay, I've just been to a top-notch place. They diagnosed me with a disease and a movement disorder. Who's going to help me with my movement? It seemed to me a fairly important requirement for this condition. And I ended up becoming my own patient.
You look at yourself in the mirror and said, I believe I'm the one that's going to help myself with this, as well as many, many others.
That's right.
So it sounds like after you got the news of a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease, you delved into research. Exactly what form did that take? Was it internet research? Did you call medical doctors? How exactly what did you do when you found out?
Well, it was about 15 years ago, so the computer wasn't as spread out, integrated into people's lives as it is today, or at least it wasn't as integrated into my life. I went to the bookstore, I went to Barnes & Noble, and I looked at all the literature they had there, and I sat down and I read what I could. And one of my doctors, I was diagnosed by two doctors, one of them said, don't go to the internet. And I think he said that because people's situations progress at just such different speeds and people have different arrays of symptoms. And I think he was concerned that I would read and see pictures of people whose situations really weren't comparable to mine, and there wasn't any reason for me to get upset about that. But no one's going to not go to the internet. So of course I did, and I also I enlisted the help of a woman named Martha Partridge, who is a Traeger practitioner, and I knew of her through the dance world because she works with both dancers and people with Parkinson's. And she was also a resource for a lot of information about other teachers and the disease itself.
When you actually did this scan of information, was the doctor's expectation confirmed? Was it rather depressing to see evidence of what was happening to people?
Somewhat. I think one memory that was more related to that wasn't related to the internet but is related to your question is that, you know, when you sit in the doctor's waiting room and you see the people around you and they're much older generally and they've got a lot of problems and you think, oh my God, where I'm headed. Who are these people? Why am I here? What happened? You know, so, and sometimes I remember one patient coming out who had a lot of rigidity, and she was very kind of zombie-like in the way she looked. I'm sure not in the way she felt. But I looked at her and I thought, oh my goodness, what am I in for? And fortunately, I'm not there yet. And I hope I won't be, but it's a difficult diagnosis for anyone.
What are your symptoms now?
Well, a lot of them, most of them are masked by the medication I take, but if I'm off my meds, I have tremor, I have slow gait, I have my arm doesn't swing, the tremors both in my hand and in my head. I have festination, which is when you take those little steps and it's like you're going down a runway. I sort of careen from wall to wall. Those are some of my problems when I'm not medicated. And people don't realize that. I mean, quite naturally, you know, that if I leave the building where I live in the morning and my medicine hasn't kicked in, I'm limping and I'm not moving well at all, and then I come back home jogging and they think, who is this lady? what's going on here?
Everyone is invited to see links to videos of you teaching in groups. And there's also an award-winning video that we have a link to of you basically talking about Parkinson's. Won an award at the World Parkinson's Conference. I want everybody to watch those videos, but you'll say the same thing. You'll say, does she really have the symptoms of Park? Are you sure? Because you are so fluid, and it's just unbelievable in terms of the work that you're actually doing.
Well, thank you.
Have your symptoms, it's been now about 15 years, progressed in the sense that they have gotten worse, or have your symptoms remained about the same, or have your symptoms progressed in the sense that they are less troublesome now?
They've definitely progressed. The progression has been at a slow rate. They've progressed both in terms of the severity of the symptom and the range of symptoms. But it happens, for me, as I said, it's happened at a very slow rate. And I'm more sensitive to it than other people. So people say, "Gol, your symptoms don't seem to be progressing at all." Well, it's not true, but I'm glad that's what they think. When I really think my moving background and my commitment to trying to move as much as possible has been neuroprotective. I know, for instance, that when my meds are wearing off, if I'm in, it happened to me yesterday, and I was, I teach at the New York College of Osteopathic Medicine in Long Island, and it was 10:30 or 11, I don't know what time it was, but anyway, my meds were wearing off, and I was having to teach. So I turned on some music, and I just got myself dancing, because I knew that if I got myself moving, I would be able to sort of carry through that time period when my meds weren't really working that well anymore, but it wasn't yet time for me to take my next dose. So movement is something I use to carry me along, and it's also something I use to keep the disease at bay as much as possible.
What do you suppose is the cause of your symptoms?
Oh, my goodness. Each of us that gets diagnosed, we rack through our brains, through our history, trying to figure out, why me? Why did this happen? Particularly with young onset, they think that there's more of a genetic predisposition. But there's no one in my family that has any history of this disease. The physicians and researchers talk about exposure to toxins. Well, I was in a dance studio dancing. I wasn't in a lab with chemicals or on a farm with pesticides or whatever. So one thing I think to myself, so I don't know if there's any scientific evidence of this, is that, well, what if my organs or my body is more sensitive to certain toxins than other people? Maybe something like chlorine, which is in the water, just as an example. Maybe there's something I've been exposed to on a regular basis that is very easy for other people's bodies to deal with, but not with mine. Maybe my detox process of my liver and kidneys doesn't function to maximal capacity. I don't know. These are just ideas that go through my head, and I don't know what scientific basis there is for them, if at all, but they're an attempt to search for the reason that I got this disease.
What therapies have you pursued that have given you sustained relief from your symptoms? And of course, you've mentioned the movement and the dance. What else?
Well, sustained relief is the word sustained is a little confusing because there's some things that require daily application, and they can provide sustained relief, but they don't, but because they require daily attention, you might not think of it as sustained. So I would say that, for instance, I mentioned Martha Partridge and Traeger. Traeger is a form of massage therapy that really works to loosen the body, and so it helps deal with rigidity, and it reconnects you to how your body used to feel before your Parkinson's. So it's helpful to me if I have some Traeger work done, but it doesn't last very long. I mean, but if I can take the information of how the Traeger is done and try to apply that to my own movement, try to work, jiggle my wrist or my hand or fling my arm in a released way, then it can have more of a sustained relief by virtue of the fact that I'm applying it myself. I tried acupuncture for about a year, and I've had various effects with that. Sometimes my head and neck get very stiff, and when I've had acupuncture treatment, it just loosens that up. I remember one day I felt like, oh my goodness, I'm an owl. I could just rotate my head, you know. And I loved that feeling. And it also made me really realize how stiff I had been. But that goes up and down, and it's not a therapy that I am able to afford on a regular basis. At one point, I had a lot of fatigue, and I went to a nutritionist to help me with my diet and supplements, and he did help me, and it's not something I'm following anymore, but that was something that brought my energy back. So that, I guess, was a form of sustained relief, but I think the most important things for me have been physical exercise, diminishing stress, and finding things that make me happy. Because it sounds kind of trite, but pleasure is an important antidote to Parkinson's, I think. And you need to get away from your Parkinson's as much as you need to delve into it. And sometimes pleasure, whether it's doing something with your family or listening to music or going to a movie or whatever, those things are important too.
How do you reduce stress in your life?
I don't. let's see. Well, sometimes when I'm on the subway on my way to a client, I do a crossword puzzle. I do it both as a way of trying to keep my brain active in terms of word retrieval, and I don't know why it reduces stress, but it's a form of escape. At late at night, I'll watch a little TV, but that's an area that I could certainly work on.
What therapies have you pursued that have not been helpful or even made symptoms worse?
I think the main thing that makes my symptoms worse is anxiety. In fact, I have a client who has a pretty severe tremor, and she said an anti-anxiety drug that she takes helps her more than her PD meds. Nervousness, anxiety is not for Parkinson's. So that's not really a form of therapy or a drug, but it's a state of being that does not mix well with the disease.
I really want to ask you about the remarkable video that you produced, which shared the first prize at the World Parkinson's Conference. What motivated you to make the video in the first place?
Well, when I was dancing, I did a lot of choreography, and I hadn't made any work for a number of years. And one of the things that you do as a choreographer is you kind of keep a library of ideas in your mind that you can go back to should something evolve that needed one of those ideas. And I had sort of when I've had different experiences with Parkinson's that have been particularly dramatic, and so I heard about this video competition, and I also heard that the video had to be under 3.5 minutes long, and I thought, okay, it's time to make something again. What am I going to do? And I just wrote down a list of the Parkinson's experiences that I had that I thought would be most interesting or effective in a dramatic way. And then I ordered them, and then I realized, oh, this is too long. I'm going to have to cut some here, and I cut here and there. And then I've made some pieces before that involved movement and language together. And I wanted to move, because that's what I can do. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, so I need to come up with some simple movement that I can put together with these words. And there needs to be a certain amount of variety and repetition. That's how it evolved.
Did the work come together quickly? Did it fall in place without a lot of stress and strain, or did
it did. Sorry to interrupt you. It came quite easily because I already had this grab bag of experiences which I've been waiting at some point to use, so I didn't know how I would use them, and the opportunity arose.
I want everybody to know that you're missing a real treat if you do not watch this video. It is truly a creative piece of work that's remarkable.
Thank you.
What is the main point you want people to take away from watching the video?
Well, I didn't make it with the idea of wanting to send a message or have any one thing for people to learn from it. I just wanted to let people know who are less familiar with Parkinson's that we, those of us who have it, have a whole range of experiences that come from it. Some are funny, some are scary, some are thoughtful. And that each of us has a bunch of stories, and they all deal with how we interact with the world around us, how we tell people we have Parkinson's, how we then comfort the people we've just told that we have Parkinson's, how we learn how to deal with that. Do we lie about it? What happens when you see a child that you can tell is scared of you because of how you're moving? Do you back off so you don't scare them? Do you tell them why you're moving that way? There are all kinds of ways we operate in the world. And I think the video was just a way to share that with both the Parkinson's and non-Parkinson's community at large.
Pamela, do you consider yourself a former professional dancer or a professional dancer?
Both. And I say both because I'm no longer able to do what I used to be able to do. And in that way, I'm currently a former professional dancer. But at the same time, I have all the knowledge, the experience, the ability to perceive what's happening physically with my body or other people's bodies. So I have all that training of a professional dancer. And so I am a professional dancer, and I'm not a professional dancer. And also, even if I didn't have my Parkinson's, I'm not sure I would still be dancing. I mean, maybe I would still be making work, and by that I mean making dances. I don't really know. But with the video, I just did make a dance of a different nature. So as long as I can keep creating in some way, whether the creative process has to do with teaching and finding methods to help people with Parkinson's, whether the creative process has to do with making a video, whether it has to do with writing a book, as long as I keep thinking and growing and reaching out, that's the most important, I think.
As I already noted, no one would really be able to know as they watch you work and teach that you currently experience some of the symptoms of Parkinson's. When you dance, do your symptoms always disappear?
Well, I would say some of my rigidity stays, but it's fascinating. The more complex the movement, the easier it is for me to do. And I ask myself, why is that? And I think it's because there are other neurological symptoms which are engaged to help my body move in a complex way. But when you take the simplest of movement, walking, turning, that there's something about the basic function that is impaired more than something much more complex. Now that may be just because I have a history as a dancer, and so what's easy for me may not necessarily be easy for someone else. And I also have to say that music is a part of my medicine. It propels me through space. If I'm frozen, it helps get me going. It makes me happy. I go around with my iPod all the time. It helps even out my gait. So that is also one aspect of dancing that helps me with my Parkinson's.
One idea people might want to consider who are having mobility challenges then might be, instead of just thinking about walking from point A to point B, they might think about dancing from point A to point B.
Absolutely. Or even, there are different ways that you can kind of take a detour in your neurological pathway. One way is to do something like, okay, you're going to take giant steps, or you're going to walk quietly. You can take either a quality, or you can take something dramatic, like you can become a Marx Brother and, you know, bend your knees and take those kind of big, low steps. But anything that will take you out of your normal movement pattern, and by normal I mean your Parkinson's movement pattern, and shift you into a different reality can be something that sort of breaks through your problem and allows you to get going. And so one thing I've did for years in walking on the outside, I would place myself behind someone, not too close behind, and I would sync up my walk with their. I would take their rhythm, I would take their gait, and I would, it would help even out my gait, and they would turn and I'd find someone else and I'd go with that person. Or another kind of, that's a visual cueing system. Another system was, I remember just the other day there was someone walking with a pair of heels and I could hear click, 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 click. So I put my walk right into her rhythm of her, of the sound of her feet. So both music, oral and visual cues are very, have helped me tremendously in working my body to move in as normal a way as possible.
How does it feel to dance and teach now as compared to, say, 25 years ago?
Well, I have to think more. I mean, with Parkinson's, we're doomed to conscious movement, and everything has to be more deliberate, though that's a little less the case when you have music to help you. And also, when I was younger, you know, I could fly about in a way that I definitely can't do anymore. But there also, when I dance now, I'm conscious about testing myself. I make sure that I put, that I balance on one leg and then I balance on the other leg, that I test out my body equally on both sides. That I'm dancing to move, but I'm also dancing to evaluate. And before, I, you know, wouldn't do things on both sides. I had no thought of evaluating. So that's another difference. But one approach to working with people with Parkinson's and dancing is basically problem solving. Okay? My lower leg from my knee to the ankle doesn't swing forward when I walk. What am I going to do about it? What's going to make that leg swing forward? So I happen to have, I'm a soccer mom. I happen to have two boys that play soccer. I put a soccer ball in a grocery bag, and I had myself kick it because I knew there was, if there was a little challenge there, I knew my body would respond. So I would walk with that bag in front, and I would kick it, and I would kick it, and I would kick it. And then I would take the bag and the soccer ball away, and I would pretend it was there. Kick, 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 I would say inside my head as a way of getting that lower leg to move forward. So there are lots of if there's a problem to solve, I just figure out what needs to happen, and then what little prop or what help can I, from anything, anyone, can I use to make that happen. I use a lot of masking tape on the floor where I gradually increase the amount of space between the lines of tape. And you can put this in a rug in a hallway or whatever. And as you walk, you have to step over the tape, and the stride increases in length as you go, so as a way to open your stride up and improve your gait. So I have a whole grab bag of tricks.
You do indeed. When you finish dancing, I'm curious, are you more energized than before you started or not?
Yes, more. Absolutely. And I'm energized not only by moving, but by helping other people. It's both a physical and a psychological component.
There is a study that was done several years ago that got quite a bit of attention in the Parkinson's literature that shows that tango dancing helps individuals mm-hmm. get relief from their symptoms. So is tango it as far as dancing is concerned, or will any dance help?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because it's an important and a big subject. I think I'm obviously partial to dancing. It's my own background. Dance involves strength. It involves alignment. It involves balance. It involves music. It involves memory and learning combinations. It's a social form, so it brings people together. There are a lot of characteristics of dance that make it particularly suited toward Parkinson's. That being said, and tango, I should say, the weight is low to the ground. There's a clear sense of rhythm. Both those things are important and good for Parkinson's. However, I also think that you just need to do something. We all know that there are things to do. The real question is what's going to make us do them, what's going to get us to that point. And I, when people say to me, well, what do you think is the best exercise for Parkinson's? One of my answers has three parts. The first part is to do an exercise or a sport that you used to do as a child, because there's a neurological memory, a neurological map built in you that is already there. It's the old, once you've ridden a bike, you always know how to ride a bike routine. And if you used to play tennis, you'll still know how to do that forehand and backhand. And you won't necessarily be as good as you used to be, but the elements will be there. And if you can do something and if you take pleasure in it, you're more likely to do it more frequently. You'll have success with it. Item number two. Do a kind of exercise you've never done before as a way of having to learn something, to create new neural activity in the brain. Item number three, whatever you do, try to do it with someone else, whether it's a friend, a personal trainer, a family member, your pet. I mean, you can make a commitment to yourself to do something, but you won't keep it. But if you make a commitment to someone else, the likelihood of you keeping it is much improved. So it's much more likely that you will get out and do whatever you plan to do. So I although there are various studies about bicycling, about tango, about a lot of things, I think it's important to view it in a pluralistic fashion. There is no one exercise program that is going to be the best for everyone that has Parkinson's. Don't think of it that way. Think of it as what is the best suited to you and to you and to you. And it depends on what you like. It depends on what your history is. Depends on your climate of where you live. Depends on how close you are to something. Depends on who will do X with you. You know, there are a whole bunch of factors that go into helping you get going. And I think the Nike ad, just do it, is part of what's important here. And so you don't want to discourage people from doing what they might be able to do. I think they say, oh, well, we don't have any tango here. I guess I can't do anything or whatever, you know. I think it's figure out what you like and then pursue it.
You have really invented and created a wide variety of exercises oriented around dance that are helping individuals who have the symptoms of Parkinson's get relief. Tell us about some of these creative ideas.
Okay. Your arms stop swinging when you walk. But if you take a grocery bag that has some food in it or anything weighted, and you kind of swing that front to back, that will help get that arm moving. And what you want to do is you want to find ways to make your body move in as normal a way as possible. So that if the arm isn't swinging, then what's going to make my arm swing? As I mentioned before, with the foot coming through, the lower leg coming through, I use the soccer ball and a bag. Also, it's very important to lead with your feet, to lead with your heels in particular, as a way of preventing yourself from falling or tripping. Because in Parkinson's, you tend to lead with your torso. So what can you do to lead with your feet? Well, sometimes I have people pretend they're like on a fashion runway because it puts their chest up and their shoulders back and it makes their feet lead. Or if you're going backwards, it's also very important for your feet to lead, because the tendency with going backwards is for your upper back to go back, and that can lead to a backward fall. So you want to sort of crouch forward and let your feet go back. Your body should always follow where your feet go. Let's see, what other things have I that are unusual? Well, with tremor, I take charge of the tremor. I shake the tremor. I don't like let the tremor shake me. I do it. That way I'm manipulating it, I'm taking control of it, and there's a sort of psychological benefit as well as a physical one. Then when I release my arm, the muscles are relaxed for a bit. The tremor won't go away totally. It'll come back. But then I do that again. But if I'm in a social situation where I don't want to look like a crazy person shaking my body around, I'll put like my hand under my leg, and then my tremor starts up, I shift position. And I'll put my hand on my hip or behind my back. My tremor starts up, I'll shift it again. So I keep, as soon as my body enters a physical behavior that I don't want, I interrupt it and I shift to another mode. And that's a way of saying, no, I'm not going there. And I just keep finding where, even I'll sit on my hands, you know. And you can, like with dyskinesia, I'm sure you've seen how Michael J. Fox is, how lucky we are to have him. And he's brilliant in many ways, but one way is the way in which he uses his movement as he's sitting and talking. And he keeps shifting around, kind of following the way, so that I use both visual cueing and oral cueing at the same time. Now, can I do that because of my dance background? Can anybody do that? I think that there are many things that people with Parkinson's cannot do initially, but they can be trained to do them. And for anyone that says people with Parkinson's can't do X, Y, Z, the important question is, but can they be taught? And that's what I try to do.
One of the truly engaging visual images in a video that's on the link that I have posted on the Parkinson's Recovery blog is a situation where people are throwing light balls at each other.
Right.
Tell people some about what that accomplishes.
Well, fall prevention, this may be a stretch, but fall prevention is very important. And one of the things that you have to train is reflexes. There are a couple things that are really important for fall prevention, and then I'll lead back to the roles. And one of them is recognizing immediately when your weight is starting to shift in a direction that would lead towards a fall. So you need to become hypersensitive and aware of what's happening with your weight so that you can begin to prevent a fall from happening early on before it's too late. Now, the ball in a circle routine involves hand-eye coordination, but it also involves quick shifts of weight. If you have to reach to get a ball that's being thrown to you, or you have to lean forward or backward. And so it deals both with quick reactions, with hand-eye coordination, and the balls are they're called gamma revolution balls. They're used for beginning tennis players. You can get them online. And they're foam balls so that they're fun to catch. And it's a fun game to play. One of the things I'm interested in my classes is finding cooperative games rather than competitive games. And what happens, this is the way this game works, is you get in a circle and you establish a pattern. Pam throws to Joe, Joe throws to Leo, Leo throws to Martha, Martha throws to Dorothy, Dorothy throws back to Pam. And then you repeat, you throw to that person and you keep that pattern going. Once you accomplish that with one ball, you add in another ball. And once you accomplish that with two balls, you add in another ball.
Oh, my goodness.
And so you just have to know who you're throwing to and who is throwing to you. But as you do that, the excitement increases. And it's a fun game to play, all the while having the idea of helping your reflexes stay in tune and helping your body control work as you have these little shifts of weight.
This is an incredible set of creative suggestions. Where does the inspiration for these creative ideas come from?
It comes from, I think, my background as a choreographer, that problem solving is an approach that I'm familiar with. I also used to be a real jock as a kid. I was very athletic, and I did a lot of different sports, and so I have a familiarity with that. And I have I think creative process is about being open to ideas and not shutting anything off. So if an idea comes into you and you think, oh, that's a good idea, what can I do with that, you know, and you come up with something and that doesn't quite work, so then you think, okay, so how can I change this to make it better? And you just kind of stay with something until you edit it or evolve it into something that works for whatever it is you're trying to accomplish. And you know, there's such a variety of PD symptoms. It gives me plenty to work with. Between gait and tremor and you know, fascination and all that stuff. So it's interesting. I'm glad it's interesting. I mean, I wish I didn't have this interest to deal with, but I wouldn't wish it on anyone. But at the same time, I have it, so I might as well make the most of it.
What is the next project for you that's really on the drawing board? Are you going to be doing another video or a book, or what's up?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm very excited because I am going to the Second World Parkinson Congress that's happening at the end of this month in Scotland. and they're going to show my video at the opening night ceremony.
Oh.
So I'm really excited about that. And there are going to be, you know, other patients and neurologists and researchers and body work people and the whole sort of gamut of professionals who are connected to this disease. So I'm totally excited. I don't travel that much. I never have the opportunity to do that. And so that's one thing I'm really looking forward to. I have, you know, a couple of projects in the back of my mind. I'm a little reticent to mention them because I don't know if they'll happen or not. But one is making a tape that people can, a videotape that people can use at home, sort of like a virtual class, so that they could have their own class at home. But I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to do that, but I may be doing that with Brooklyn Parkinson's Group. And the other thing that I've just put up my website, and what I would really like to do is to go to communities, give workshops in the variety of subjects that I have. Fall prevention, dance class, how to collaborate with your doctor, you know, just share whatever information I have that I think can be useful to people. And then I would like if that community can find an athlete or a dancer or someone that I can teach, that I can give them a crash course in what I do. We make up a syllabus. I share my music with them. They teach while I'm there. I critique their class. And so that when I leave, there is a situation set up in that community to continue what we've done. That, I think, would be a very exciting project and a way to extend what I have to offer people on an ongoing and regular basis.
What an awesome idea. What is your website address?
It is Pamela Quinn, that's PamelaQuinn.net.
Tell us about the Brooklyn Parkinson's Group.
The Brooklyn Parkinson Group is a group run by Ole Westheimer, and it's an arts-based advocacy group for people with Parkinson's. And many years ago, Ole, who used to do some dancing herself, her husband is a neurologist, and so she saw a lot of people with Parkinson's, and she said to herself, these people need to dance. They have to move to music. And so she lived in Brooklyn, and at the time the Mark Morris Dance Studio had opened in Brooklyn, and so she went to them and she said, you know, I'm interested in trying to get some movement classes going for people with Parkinson's. Would you be interested in collaborating with me on this? And they said, sure. And they were looking to develop community outreach programs. So that started, and what happened with me is I heard about that program, and I called Ole, and I met with her, and I said, you know, I'm interested in starting a movement lab. I want a place where I have people with Parkinson's and where I can experiment with new ideas. Because I was interested in dance, but not only dance. I mean, my class is dance-based in that it involves movement and it involves rhythm and it involves music, with I have a great accompanist named Tigger Benford. But I also wanted to be able to work with walking, and I wanted to be able to use some of these props that I bring in. And I wanted to be able to experiment, and that's why I call it a movement lab. But to get back to the Brooklyn Parkinson Group, They have a voice class. They have a fitness program. They have a dance class. And they have my movement lab. And they have a support group. So they have a number of things that they offer people with Parkinson's. And I should also mention, though, that the other place that I teach a group class, NICOM, New York College of Osteopathic Medicine, which is part of New York Institute of Technology, they also have a great program. Under one roof, they have voice therapists, osteopaths, they have an OT, occupational therapist, they have a dance class, they have really good physical therapists, they have a wellness program. So that's another program I'm involved in that has many things under one roof, and it specializes in treating people with Parkinson's.
How can listeners get information about these two programs?
Well, they could Google them. I don't happen to have the phone numbers right at my fingertips here, but they could, Brooklyn Parkinson's Group, I know, has a website of its own, and the NICOM, New York College of Osteopathic Medicine, it's called the Adele Smithers Parkinson Center, and it's in Old Westbury, Long Island, and that should be enough information to lead you to the right place.
What would you want to say to an individual who was just diagnosed with the symptoms of Parkinson's this week?
I would say, you're going to have a wonderful life. Live it. Don't worry about the fact that you have a chronic disease. You can work with it. You will find people to help you. And it's not the end of the world. In some ways, it's the beginning to a new world. And the best thing to do is just to take charge and the old adage of live one day at a time. But it's not a horrible sentence. You know, it's really, there are ways to work with it. There's lots of research going on so that if you've just been diagnosed, you're lucky. And the most important thing is not to isolate yourself, because that happens. You know, if you haven't told people yet and you're hiding it, and the more you hide it, the more anxious you get, the more your symptoms go out of control, and there's a whole sort of catch-22 business. And you have to go through different periods of accepting it. You know, first accepting it yourself and mourning the loss of yourself, and then how do you tell people? Who do you tell? There are a whole lot of different stages. But the most important thing is to know that you're going to be okay.
Pamela Quinn, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, they can go to my website at pamelaquinn.net, and that will give you contact information. It will include my email address, and that's probably, and it has my phone number there too. So that would be the best way for people to reach me.
What question have I neglected to ask but really needs to be asked?
Well, I think there needs to be a collaborative approach to treating people, which I took a course called Allied Teacher Training for People with Parkinson's, which had music people, psychologists, financial people, MDs, you know, all together. But what I'm thinking of is there, Parkinson's is a movement disorder among many things. There are a lot of different ways in which the body is affected. And these movement disorder centers don't know anything about movement. And that needs to be addressed, that the physicians, the neurologists, need to be collaborating with physical therapists. And not just any physical therapists that specialize in Parkinson's. And physical therapists need to learn about Parkinson's from patients. And so that if it is indeed correct that movement and activity is neuroprotective, then we've got to find a way to include therapy for people on a regular basis. And another thing that plugs into that is the way the insurance situation is set up is it's all oriented towards someone that has an injury that will heal. It's not oriented towards chronic disease. And chronic disease needs ongoing application. And the insurance business is unwilling to recognize that or support that financially. And so that's another problem that needs to be addressed in order to help people work on a regular basis. And ultimately, that will help the health system anyway, because if people are working out regularly, they're better, they'll need less physical aid, they won't be as dependent on medication, and it won't be as expensive. So we need to find a way to set up wellness programs so that if there's a cap on the physical therapy that you can get because of your insurance, there's a wellness program connected to that physical therapy that allows you to go and be monitored and to work out on a regular basis. And they have that at the New York College of Osteopathic Medicine. And it has to be $10 a shot or something that people who are on limited incomes can handle. But ultimately, the healthcare system is, if it focuses more on preventive medicine and ways to keep people moving on a regular basis, they're going to be able to deal much better with this baby boom generation who are no longer babies and are entering old age. So there's a little speech for you.
Pamela Quinn, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for being a guest on the show today.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm happy to share the information, and I'm happy to talk with any of your listeners.